All right, thank you so much for joining us today on Ride On Radio. Today's guest is Ellen Analaba and her newly released translated English book, The Home of the Drowned. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And to get us started, she will read a passage from the novel and then we'll get right into the discussion.
Yeah. I'm not very used to reading English, but I
Oh,
make my
jeez.
bed. Anne mixed her own washing water and scrubbed the roses on the fabric. The edge of the stream was steep, and there was no place to stand. Her arm brushed against the loudness. Launa considered what to say. Sometimes she wasn't sure about Anne. She'd become so absent, as if floating between worlds, one underground, just as well as the one with her sister. She and Anne stood beside each other on the first summer night after they had arrived, after Inga had fallen asleep, looking at the lake and the village in the water. It wasn't the nicest goatee we had, Anne had tried to comfort Rauna. No. But it was mine. They had grown up with the same childhood memory of the first stemming, the first memory of the second, but then both adults. The first had been the worst, although there was less water that time. The company had dammed over the village, but most of the grazing lands had remained. The graves were still there, most of the holy places. And yet, the first time you lose your home, it's overwhelming. After that, you feel less anchored every time, homeless in part at first, then eventually in whole. Some said it was a kind of a freedom to be able to move where you wanted, but freedom has a warmer color. Freedom was more like the evening sun in the Gohti, not like this. This was the feeling of being frozen.
Thank
I
you.
think
Yeah, you're good. Thank you
I'll
so much for that excerpt. Just to give a brief overview, do you mind kind of sharing a little bit of background and how you got into writing and just a little bit about yourself?
Oh, how did I get into writing? I think I've always been writing. I was a journalist in the beginning, but I was a really bad news journalist. I always asked too much and wanted
Oh,
to.
gee. I feel like that
To
makes you a good
no,
journalist. It's asking too many questions. Isn't
but
that the job description?
I always wanted to like know more about those things, like in the outskirts of my questions, like the birds and the love and the things, not the news really. So I kind of quickly figured that maybe I'm not to work with news, that I should be working with like longer text and longer stories. And this really, really beautiful storytelling tradition that we have at home in Sápmi, in my land, where we have a lot of people being really, when they start to tell things, it's kind of magic. So I fell in love with that and started to collect those stories. So that's where I started.
So for this book, is this like a collection and amalgamation of those stories that you grew up with as well? And can you just give a brief overview? The Home of the Drowned contains a multi-generational narrative, of women specifically. And can you just describe the kind of women that influenced your life and then to this project?
They are Sami women, indigenous women. They are really, they know how to make a living. They can fish, they are reindeer herders, they get wood. Well, they are like managing every aspect of life. So they are like really strong women, but at the same time, very hurt by history, or have to say. So they're like really strong and like really fragile in the same time. So I'm always being fascinated by those women that we had. I had very close to me, and I had those kind of families. And some families with just women, because the men were up in the mountains. You had these like women families with a lot of aunts and grandmothers and daughters and sons, of course, as well. But in my book, there's just the three of them, so it's a really small family to be a Sami family. Actually, they're often bigger than that, but in the book, there are three. So there's mother, and that's the aunt Anne, and that's the daughter Inga.
So is the book based off of true events of the Swedish government building a hydro dam in the name of, like, what was it, say, quote unquote, progress, and that it displaced the indigenous tribes within the area? So that's based off of true events, correct? I was wondering if you could just kind of go a little bit overview about that, because this was occurred in the 30s, I believed, like pretty recent.
It is. It started in the 20s, and then you had like several dammings. So then the last one was actually in the 70s.
Oh.
So I'm born in the 80s. So this was just before my time. But the village where I grew up was still like in some kind of shock when I was a kid. So we got to know about the history, and we actually lived by this lake, this big reservoir. So it was not, you could not, it was like evident what happened because all the land had been drowned and all the old villages and everything was like underwater. So without asking, of course, because there's an indigenous people, and when it happened to the Swedes, and to they actually asked them, and they gave them like new houses, and they gave, but in Sweden you had some kind of idea that indigenous people were like moving, because some are moving are like nomadic people. So as we were moving, you could just move us. So I grew up with this story and by this lake. That was not, when I was a kid, it has like been transformed from a lake, and it was actually called the sea because it was so big. So we called it like the sea because what used to be like seven small lake has become this big, huge, very brutal dam.
I'm kind of curious about the so this is the second book, I believe, through the University of Minnesota Press, right? And then you had a previous one, and I'm just kind of curious, what did you change from your previous book to now this one, in terms of writing?
Well, they are both very, this is a novel, so, and the first one is a nonfiction book, so that's, of course, it's a big change. But they are very, this book is also very documentary, and I actually had the thinking about making a nonfiction book at first, but then it became a novel. But they are based on this very oral storytelling tradition, and I wanted them to be like close to the Sami voice and closer to how people speak. But they are also very poetic, I think, because people have a very poetic way of telling and speaking that I wanted to have in the book. So you have nature also as a kind of person in the novel. The lake, of course, that has this is its own voice, but also the mountains and the glaciers and like the surroundings.
I kind of want to elaborate a little bit about when you mentioned nature as a person. Is that also a part of the Sami tradition as well, as like nature as people and a part of community? Can you elaborate a little bit more for that for our listeners at home?
Yeah, you have. I think, I mean, like in many indigenous communities, you don't make such a big difference between animals and people and nature. And in Sami tradition, you have like the same songs for the same way of singing to animals as to people. And you have, when people are talking about, especially when they are talking about like difficult things and things that have been happening in history, they often speak about nature instead of speaking about themselves, like in some kind of way of so they are people are using nature a lot when they speak about what have been happening to them. So when I do that in the book, it's often things that I actually have heard, so I haven't been like making it up. It's actually how people talk about themselves and talk about their land and
I
their life.
want to kind of go a little bit, because this is a book in English, and it's like, well, the one translated here is into English. How was like that translation process? Because this is not the first time one of your works has been translated into English, but for stuff like this, like, do you ever think like words and phrases kind of get lost in translation, so to speak?
Yeah, that's like the way, that's life with translation. It's always gonna be some kind of violence in that process, because but I think it's like extra difficult maybe with my books, because they have also a lot of Sami words in it, in the Swedish original text. There is a lot of my Sami language, so it's like a A mixture of Swedish and Sami in the beginning, which becomes a mixture of English and Sami in the translation. But I really like how Elizabeth Clark Wessel has translated the book. She's like, so you have the Sami tone or the Sami voice, even though it's in English, and that's beautiful that even readers in English can some kind of can hear my language
Oh, that's
coming
so cool.
from far away.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful. I never thought of it like that. Yeah, because it's like, because Swedish Sami, and then it's the Sami English, and then just that entire translation process. I'm always kind of fascinated by. I just want to talk a little bit about the indigenous activism in Sami history and culture, and your role as an activist. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Oh, I'm a. I think you might maybe. Is that you don't have actually a that big a choice. You almost have to be one, even though you didn't wish to be one. My activism, is like kind of a very silent one. It's like a writing activism. So I'm not the one standing on the barricades and not demonstrating, and sometimes feeling a bit bad about that, just being home writing. But we have still. I would wish to. I wish to say that this was like history and this is like a history book, but it's too. It's like too close to what's happening today in real life, and it's actually also now with the climate changes and that being like very apparent and real in the north where it's happening really quickly. That was like influenced the book as well when I was writing it. So that is like the big fight we have now to make what we can to avoid the worst to happen.
How can you?
Even though it's in.
I was wondering if you can just like elaborate a little bit more about climate change and the Sami people and how that's currently affecting their cult and like how that also influenced the book because it's like quote unquote progress to build hydro dams and then climate change currently. And how is that affecting the Sami folks?
Well, we have for a long time now been losing land. So we have been losing land for these kind of hydropower dams and for mines and for the very, very vast forestry they have in Sweden. And then like for maybe, well, the last 10, 20 years, you had like the climate change is coming like running towards us, which means my family is reindeer herding, so we have animal and they're in the wild. And we never had to feed them. They've always been like in the wild. But for the last, I would say, 5 years, they can't find food anymore. So it's like a very big drastic change. So we've actually gone from having animal in the nature to being farming animals in the wintertime and to make them survive, which is like a very brutal change of life. So climate change isn't like some kind of future scenario. It's actually really, really, really in the everyday life already.
And I kind of want to go back to the Swedish government. Here in Minnesota, we do have, I believe, currently 11 federally recognized tribes, and there's some form of reparations happening as of like last week. The University of Minnesota and the in conjunction with the DNR in the state gave back land from the Colquitt Forestry Service because it was used as a research station and then sold off to timber. Does the Swedish government currently have any sort of land reparations towards the Sami people? You mentioned like building houses, but we're talking like land. Land back is kind of our progressive term here.
Not like voluntarily, no. But you have the Sami people going to court, and like suing the state to make them to. So there have been actually some tribes and areas being successful with that, and then other ones coming like looking at that and seeing maybe we could do the same. So we have like the biggest success for some people right now is actually in culture when it comes to literature and film and music and being that is being like recognized in Sweden and in the other Sami countries as well. But when it comes to rights and land and to those kind of, it's always like hardship for the governments to yeah.
Rick.
So no, not really successful, I wouldn't say.
Hopefully in the future. Is it promising? Do you think it's promising to have some sort of reparations for the Sami people and the Swedish government, or?
I think that what's happening in Anna, I think it's like, even though it seems far away, it's good that it's happening in Minnesota, because that will finally arrive. That will like be helping other people in other like different parts of the world, because we have like a very global world right now. So what is like happening in international will eventually come and help us. I do believe so. I have to believe that.
I love what I really like about your novel, particularly is women and kind of get back to the meat of the novel, particularly relationships with mother and the aunt, and as somebody who I don't want to say like inheriting like your family's trauma, but in terms of like indigenous displacement, do you think that's also kind of the fact of like inheriting generational trauma, and seeing how do you, I don't want to say cope, but like cope with that sort of framework, living space, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think when you I'm a mother myself, and I think when you become a mother, you have to think about what you're actually giving and what you're not always wanting the good things, but you are still doing that. So you have like a heritage that is so beautiful and so rich in many ways, but you also have a heritage that you have to, unfortunately, that you are giving without wanting to give it. And you have children that will grow up too quickly into realizing that they will be hearing things and will be like forced to stand up for themselves like in too young age. So I think that's why I've been writing a lot about motherhood and the daughter and the relationship, and also around the mother not really having time to be a mother. I've been thinking a lot about that. What if you're always like fighting for your rights and for your land, for your village, and for your, and you don't and you actually should just be a mother. You should be there for your kids, but what if you don't? You won't find time for that, because there's so other fights to have in the same time.
I was kind of curious, do you think like also writing this book would also be helping your children as well to like learn about Sami traditions and the culture and the history as well? I know it's like kind of framed as a novel instead of like, like pure nonfiction. It's kind of thinking
Yeah,
about that in the future.
not just my children. I think what we're actually doing in Sapmi right now is trying to save our history, because it's really fragile. We have this oral tradition, which is a very big, beautiful literature in itself, but it's like based in people that are getting old, and that carry those stories, and in that way you can suddenly lose it. So we're trying to write it down and trying to get it into books and into maybe in the future library. We don't have that many books yet, right? But maybe sometime. So there are a lot of writers doing that, and like in different. I think there's not a Sami person living that don't. That have like kind of a history that you understand, like a whole kind of history. I don't know if they're actually people having that, but in Sami life, at least, you have a lot of things that you don't know about, and history that have been like untold in many ways and in many areas. So we're trying to build that up.
We've noticed, and it's like a conversation I had with Janice Fairbanks. She was the she was University of Minnesota Press. It was Sugar Bush Babies, and she is a Ojibwe language preserver and cultural preserver, and it's same thing like oral traditions, and that she talks, con she talks, she speaks, and it's like they don't not super like into words, and then like you have to write in English, and it's a how do you preserve indigenous culture into like your colonizing language, which is a thought I think a lot of folks in indigenous communities have. But really, what you kind of pointed at was like radio or spoken word as a way to preserve it. So, like the audio files, the tapes, those MP3s. Is there a way that Sami people utilize that to pre help preserve as well their culture?
Yeah, Maybe. I know, for instance, that have been like a way of writing with other people, that way you are actually taping them, because people, a lot of people can't write. They're like really, really good speakers, but they're like, they never like taught the Swedish language to write in Swedish, and they never ever taught to write in Sami, because you weren't like allowed to have Sami in school, so you're like in between the languages and you have no like written language. We ha then you have to be going to tapes and to orality. Do you say that? I don't know if that's the word. But you have to be. You have to be. So radio has always been a really, really big thing in Sapmi, because listening and talking, I mean, that is like the core of the core of our language and our life. It is becoming more and more written as well. There is still a lot of people that can't write, and that can speak the language, but they can't write.
I had no idea. Never. That's pretty heartbreaking to hear. But hopefully, like, they will, like, preserve the language, and then hopefully write it down. But Alain, do you have any last thoughts for us, for our listeners at home, that you would like us to hear about? Because you're going to be coming in September, I believe.
Yeah,
Do
I will. I'm just so very glad that because I have been working with literature, and for me the world became like much bigger when I realized that there were like indigenous writers out in the world that I could read. So like it was like the Sami literature was like being like double. I was like doubling it up. I was like having so much to read. I'm so glad that a book is out in the US, and that, because there are some very, very good writers there, and it has been actually been like I think for many Sami people like empowering to have that meeting like in literature and in books and in films and in music with other indigenous people. So it makes me very happy that maybe the book can find some kind of home, as I have found books that have been like a home for me.
Ooh, I'm curious. We do have a little bit of time. What kind of books or other Indigenous writers would you recommend, or that you've been really into recently?
I am, for the moment, actually right now started. I haven't just started, so I can't say too much. But I'm reading Alexis Wright from Australia. It's a really, really thick book, praiseworthy, and I just started it, so I can't say. But it's like, and I went to New Zealand last year, with my first book, about forced relocations, and then there I got a lot of books from Maori writers that I took back. So they have also a really, really beautiful literature from on Aotearoa, New Zealand. And we have some summer writers as well that have been translated into English. And then maybe I think one of the best books, if someone is interested in Sami literature, is a writer called Linnea Axelsson. And she's been writing this really, really beautiful epic poem from Sápmi, which is called Eðnan, and the land. And that is like one of the best books I ever read. So, yeah.
All right. Alain, do you mind reading a small excerpt from your book again while we close out? It is such a beautiful language, and I always love it, hearing authors. And I know I'm sorry to put English on you.
You want it in Sami, in
Oh,
my language?
yes.
Yeah, we do
Oh, let's
that.
do it. Oh, that's gonna make my day. Thank you.
I can read the lake, because the lake is actually speaking in books, so I can try to read that in
Yeah,
Sami, in
yes,
my
let's
language.
do it. Yes.
Moslei namma manin muhte. Muhtu le ähpitsielekasa, enas vuodju, muhtu ma kouttuhi kirgi. Letin tjualmi ja kätti, kortti ja luofta. Mus letse kuolie, tähti lotti, ta letse hein. Letsen jauri, ma naama ja luedi, takke horro täppi juigemu. Nana muhtan sin juigenu, nana hoodal taan. Tali hoodal, Nashatai. Litsin kiedä jauri, kun tjähpys pikta kurrie, kurrie, teude. Valdemu, in mähtän ko seukali. Siivu, on piuhtan. Arpmi muu. Tuotta, joka tarvanetse. Pakkus tjetnjuretse muu. Soten merran ja kortsi ei kullunsa. Mun tulevan ja päärua loktanetse.
Thank you so much. That was beautiful. Oh, thank you. All right. Thank you, Elena Anna Atlaba, and your newly released book, The Home of the Drowned. You can find it through University of Minnesota Press, and you can prop and you will be around sometime in the fall, coming to Minnesota.
Yeah, I will be in Minneapolis, in the middle of September-ish.
Ooh. Yeah,
Yeah.
somewhere around there. You can pro we'll find more information and keep that posted on for you. But thank you again for joining us for Ride On Radio.
Thank you.